the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, this is Bobby Golden. We're back again on the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Like always, I have my co-host, Dr. Jason Bond, with me. And today we have the privilege of having two of the soybean specialists, or the only two soybean specialists in the Mid-South right now, Dr. Jeremy Ross from Arkansas and our own Dr. Trent Irby. Is over here.
Dr. Ross is not only from Arkansas, he has that incredibly long title that's associated with Arkansas. So why don't you lay that on us there, Dr. Ross?
I'm the extension agronomist for soybeans / professor.
Yeah, but the division of ag.
What do y'all call that?
I'm with the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture. Cooperative Extension Service.
Yeah, put that on your voicemail greeting.
And Trent works for Mississippi State Extension.
Yeah,
as does
a lot easier.
Myself and Jason Bond. But Trent wanted to start with a quote, and I guess how wet is it in Arkansas? Because it's dang wet in Mississippi.
It's sloppy wet. I think one farmer posted on Twitter, he said he almost got 48 hours into the new year without having substantial rain.
I saw that. Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah. Well, no, we've been wet since first week of August, and it hasn't been dry.
Y'all had a lot of difficulty getting the crop out too. Probably a little bit more than we had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it was just because we've got a little bit more acreage. Plus, I think we were probably a little bit wetter than y'all.
Yeah, I think the further north you went, the worse it got.
Yeah, and I think y'all were substantially ahead of us on harvest. And so y'all hit some.
That's
little
how
bit
we
better
roll,
weather.
Jeremy.
Well,
we got to jump on it for
if
sure.
If I was a little bit further south, I might be able to have that too. So, but we were wet, and I haven't seen a field that doesn't have a rut in it.
And didn't y'all had some fields go under well before harvest too? Didn't you?
With the river up, right?
Well, we had a couple of events, especially up in the Clay County, Randolph County, Lawrence County, the Black River and the Current River got out back in August. And then we had an event that kind of sat on top of Mississippi County for several hours that dumped about 14 inches of rain in about a 24-hour period. So
that hurts.
There was one of our larger farmers, his bean crop was completely underwater.
And if y'all hadn't been to Mississippi County, there's a lot of black dirt up there.
Yeah, and I was up there about a week after just because of schedule, and it smelled like a hog sty.
Back some time ago, I lost cell phone in Mississippi County. Probably floated out with that 14 inches of rain.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's down the river by now.
But you may have lost some good years of your life in Mississippi County, too.
Motorola V60, if that kind of dates me a little bit.
It does.
That does. But yeah, I mean, it was rough, because y'all experienced in Mississippi some of the same situations that, we kind of went straight out of winter into summer. And it was cold and wet, had issues trying to get plants, emerged, and then it got hot and dry pretty quick.
Or as Jason says.
Y'all had some snow in April, didn't you? In places?
Yeah, in places. Yeah, I think Fayetteville.
And Jason says we had July and May, so that's how quick it turned. But Trent says what we're going to talk about today, and he said I could quote him on this.
Yeah, I wouldn't quote it directly.
Yeah, I'm going to quote it directly. He said that the topic of the conversation today is how are we going to make money farming soybeans in 2019 in a pretty crappy market. So being that y'all are both the soybean specialists on a large chunk of the acreage in the Mid-South, we're going to open the doors and y'all are going to tell us how are we going to start to make money when we're starting off pretty bad right now because a lot of our field prep didn't get done. And on the heavy ground, it's going to be an issue.
That's the most obvious thing to me, and I welcome Jeremy's comments on this. The first thing that comes into my mind and to make money on soybean, no matter what the market is timely planting. There's just too much information. We've had too much success with this early soybean production system. And looking at the fields right now, looking at what we've been through this fall, some field work got done, but a lot hadn't, and there's a lot of ruts out there. That's going to have to dry out before we can really do what we got to do. So, Jeremy, your thoughts on ways we can improve our timely planting, given the environment we've had to date?
It's going to be tough, especially if we stay in the weather pattern that, we've been in for the last 3 or 4 months. I mean, you know, some of these fields are going to have to dry up considerably before, you know, we can kind of start taking some of these ruts out. And, you know, based on if and when, you know, we finally do get some decent weather, it's going to take a while to, you know, to get those fields where they're able to be planted. And so, you know, I don't foresee the early planting as much acreage in 2019 as we've probably seen, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, just because of the situation that we're, that we got ourselves into.
And when you say early planting in Arkansas, what do you mean?
So anything probably prior to April 20th.
Okay. So our early planting in Mississippi, Trent, correct me if I'm wrong, it's going to be a little earlier than that.
Yeah. Usually around April 5th is when we kind of get a, if the weather lets us, we'll get a big kickoff there.
But for the last several years, you know, what we consider early planting is probably anything prior to April 20th.
You know, in the grand scheme of the data, I guess you look at anything, that 20th just seems to be a mark that comes out in multiple data sets in terms of anything prior to that. And then after that, we start to see a yield decline. So that's a, you know, I think that's a pretty good fit for both of our states.
It is. And, you know, Larry Purcell had that Mid-South project that, and, you know, mainly I've been focusing on the Arkansas data. And, you know, coming out of that data, early planting was better, but we didn't know how much better, you know, what percentage we were losing as we delayed planting. And, you know, if you look at maturity group fours, they were the best maturity group planted. And then fives fell in pretty much behind them, and threes, you know, for extended, you know, for a little bit. But, you know, that optimal planting window is the 1st of April. And then once you get past that, you really start seeing some fraction of a percent.
Unless you look at my part of that data set, which we did on creek ground here at Stoneville, and it said plant beans on creek ground and you can't go wrong.
Well, that's an exception to the rule there, buddy. We happen to have access to that. Not everybody's that lucky.
Well, bringing up the maturity group thing, you know, that I think we've established that if the weather doesn't change, it's going to be hard to do anything in April with all the field prep that still remains to be done. So if we're looking at a May-planted crop this year for the majority of our acres, you know, the thing that comes to my mind next is variety selection and doing everything we can to make sure we put the right variety on the right acre. What are your thoughts on our new genetics? You know, we got a lot of new varieties out there. I'm going to plant several new ones this year that, you know, we have limited data on from the years past.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the million-dollar question. I mean, variety has been changing so rapidly, you know, especially the last 4 or 5 years, and new technologies coming in and really not being able to get a, you know, a good handhold on some of these varieties before they're rotated out. You know, previously, you know, we were able to look at a variety for at least 3 to 4 years before, you know, it kind of started declining from the market, especially some of the better ones. But now it seems like, you know, every other year they're rotating out those varieties. So it's difficult to really get a good handle on, you know, what those, you know, varieties are, how they're going to perform. But, you know, looking at the Mid-South data, and especially data out of Arkansas, you know, we're showing that, you know, group fours are by far better yielding compared to threes, fives, and sixes, you know, planted pretty much the entire span of our planting window. Really, once you get out to the really late plantings, which I really hope we don't have, you know, July, August plantings, but, you know, at that point is when kind of the fours and fives kind of intersect and they're kind of about the same. But
so you're talking about fours and fives and sixes and all that in practice in Arkansas. Break down to me what the percentage of fours, fives, sixes are on a landscape area.
So I'd say probably roughly 75% of everything's group fours, and that spans. We're seeing a lot more early fours planted, especially in southern Arkansas, than we had the last, you know, 10 years. And then, you know, then I'd say 25% is going to be in that five. And a lot of those are going to be early fives.
Which may or may not be determinant.
That's true. Yeah. In the Mid-South, we're kind of in that gray area because, you know, we can grow indeterminates and determinants. But when you start getting into that 4.9, 5.0, 5.1, 5.2s.
Do you really know what they are?
I don't think you do. I mean, it really kind of starts kind of getting a little gray.
A bazillion soybean varieties, we about run out of numbers.
Yeah, pretty much. And I can't keep up with varieties anymore. I used to be able to keep up with them. But
so, Trent, what would you say our percentage is in Mississippi?
I think, you know, 5 years ago, I would have called it 80-20 group four to group five. I think it's actually shifted higher, you know, pushing 85% probably group fours and 15%.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. All right, so guys, thinking about 2019 and varieties, and Trent, you were talking about pushing that planting date later, you know, for practical purposes with field prep. So what do you tell a guy that's, you know, maybe he's got his beans booked? I know there's some flexibility afforded him, but there's not enough flexibility to accommodate everybody that may already have their beans booked and need to change varieties as they go, you know, into the spring. So what do you suggest to a guy that's in that situation?
That has everything booked in terms of his maturity?
Yeah.
He's going to have to space it out, I guess. I think that's what you're asking.
Yeah, it is.
You know, one thing that almost boggles my brain every spring whenever we do break loose and start planting, how fast we can plant and how fast it all gets ready at the same time, but we can't harvest it. So, you know, that would be one of the things that I would keep in mind during this planting season is the harvest capacity and what to do in terms of spreading things out to be able to accomplish that task at hand. But at the same time, after you get past middle of May, our yield loss is increasing dramatically in terms of delaying the planting date.
That wouldn't be exclusive to one maturity group.
Everything,
over. That's everything.
So in terms of maturity group, you know, looking at the data that Jeremy mentioned a minute ago, Bobby mentioned a minute ago, other data sets that we have in the Mid-South, you know, I tend to stick with the group fours, and even after I shift late, I still stick with the group fours. You lose the advantage, I guess, is how I would word it. The yield advantage of a group four is gone after you get out to June. Everything's about the same.
And I think you combine that with what Jeremy said earlier about, you know, basically the flexibility of those fours over that reasonably large, you know, wide range of planting dates. Back to my question, that guy, maybe there's enough stress, maybe he shouldn't stress out too bad mm-hmm. about that. Just spread it out and keep moving forward.
Yep. But I think, you know, you said we can get planted such in a rapid pace. You know, if you go back and look at this past year, we had almost 50% of our crop planted in about a 2 to 3 week window, you know, when we finally got mm-hmm. some decent weather.
And 50% of the crop in the Mid-South is what, 4 million acres? 3 million acres?
Well, last year in Arkansas, we had 3.28 million, and then y'all were
2.2.
And so, yeah, I think that if you look back, we got such a big percentage planted in such a rapid period. I think that might be in some of the problems we had in 2018. We just didn't have the capacity.
I agree.
You know,
and, without question. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That was just one of the pieces of the puzzle. You know, we could sit here and talk, you know, several hours about, you know, what happened in 2018, but I think that we just had a tremendous amount of the crop that was ready and should have been harvested, but just because of weather, we couldn't get in there and get it out.
Mm-hmm. I think it would probably be best served if we put 2018 behind us and don't go there, because there's a lot of foul moods, and let's not bring
it's
up those wounds.
It's 2019 now, man. Let's move on.
It is.
That's right. We got to figure out a way to move this water off the field, get these fields dried up, and get some rows thrown up. That's what we got to figure out.
So what do y'all, you know, between the two of you, and I know our production varies, but – you know, if you're having a conversation with a soybean grower today, you know, here in the middle of winter when it's full wet and you know, rain in the forecast, you know, what are you advising him to, besides waiting, obviously, you know, what's going to be his first step?
I guess the first step is try to get in as quick as you can without doing any more damage, you know, to these fields. You know, some of these is going to take quite a bit of work. Some not as much. You know, you got, you know, some fields that may have, you know, 4 or 5 inch deep ruts, you know, you can kind of take care of those fairly easily. But some of these I've seen, you know, where the belly of the combine was dragging, you know, you got ruts out there that are going to be up to your waist. And those are going to take a little bit more time trying to, you know, correct those issues. And so with those issues, my next main concern is going to be compaction issues.
Well, and that's what I wanted. I was sitting here thinking about, you know, you and Bobby with y'all's soils background. If you do push it and work it, you know, maybe a few days before you needed to, how do you address the problem you create when you don't know, you know, you might not know that you created a problem. What are you going to look for to recognize that problem? Maybe is a better way to ask that.
Well, and Bobby may be able to chime in on this too. I mean, it's one of those situations, if you work it too wet, you're really not going to know until you get the crop planted and it comes up and you start seeing restricted root growth, poor irrigation penetration, you know, fertility issues, because now you're looking at that crop, you know, being grown in a 4 to 5 inch depth, you know, as opposed to being able to go down, and especially some of our taproot.
Well, I think, you know, that all depends on how deep you work it.
True.
And unfortunately, there will be some ground work too wet this year because we tend to pull the trigger on things. If we work it shallow, get just enough loose dirt that we can build a bed or a bed of roller or something like that, we're probably going to be in better shape this year, because looking at the weather, and I don't know when we're going to catch a break.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the extended forecast.
We were talking to a guy earlier today, and he said he felt like on his farm, if it stopped raining today, he couldn't put a tractor in there for 2.5 weeks.
Is that under these conditions or under warmer conditions?
If it stopped raining today, he couldn't put a tractor in his field for 2.5 weeks.
Man, I would have said it would take longer than that.
Yeah, I
would have too.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, with the temperatures we had, you know, everything just is slow anyway, you know, drying out. So that surprises me.
I mean, we can be optimistic. I mean, y'all know, if we get some sunshine and some high wind, it won't take long to dry things out if we can just catch that break.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been, you know, in the past, have meetings in February and really not have a very good crowd just because we got a decent, you know, 4 or 5 days worth of weather. Farmers out working in the fields in February.
So. Yeah, the hard part's going to be just depending on what kind of damage was created with the harvest from last fall.
Yep.
You talk about that, and talk to a lot of guys over here, and I know y'all do a lot of stale seed bedding in Arkansas, but here in Mississippi, we're over the top on stale seed bedding, especially for our beans. So, Trent, we're like completely changing the game this year and going to turn back to the olden days, because – you start talking to people and they've got less than 0.25% of their ground in a stale seedbed system because they just couldn't get to it. So how do you tell those guys go forward when they're used to a different system?
It's going to be some changes. And I guess one of the things that comes to my mind also is the weed control. And I'd welcome Jason's comments on that. You know, in our stale seedbed system, I think we focus on weed control from today till planting. I mean, that's what we have to deal with. And now we've got to figure out burn down on top of tillage, on top of bedding, on top of more herbicides. I don't know. It's going to be a different year for sure.
Well, we got a nominal amount of residual out in the fall. A lot of that would be in the South Delta, you know, where they did have early harvest and got stuff worked up. During that week that was clear in, you know, last November 1st to December, there was quite a bit of stuff went out, you know, by air, obviously, because there was, you know, it never got dry enough to run in the field. But there was a lot of at least post-treatments went out. And the conversations that I had at the time, I kind of discouraged them from spending the money on the residual, because our history told us that we were kind of toward the back end of the fall emergence window for our winter annual weeds, and, you know, didn't necessarily get that because we really haven't had any winter here since November. I mean, we had, you know, some really cold days in November, but, you know, it's been cool, and we've had some frost a few mornings, but for the most part, we haven't had, you know, conditions like we would expect in December and January. So I don't know. I might have made the wrong call there. But I still say, you know, what I was telling guys at the time, if the field you're referring to, you know, it has to be worked in the spring, I leave the residual out, because in most of the cases, we're not talking about running a chain disc or a scratcher. We're talking about some pretty significant tillage in a lot of these situations, which is going to, outside of some big gnarly ryegrass, you know, we're probably going to take care of most of it, you know, with that big, heavy tillage that we've got to do to get these fields back in shape. You know, ryegrass, you know, we could talk for a long time about it and how we address that in a strange year like what we're going into. The only thing I really want to say related to that right now is you can't disc up big ryegrass. You know, if you get into the middle of March and you've got those big tillered out ryegrass plants with big root balls, it's really hard to disc it up, because if you get a shower on top of it, it's going to root back down and keep going. So, you know, that's the only caution I would provide, you know, for weed control in this conversation.
So what's your opinion on, you know, the seed bank? You know, if we had a field that kind of got out of hand, but yet we're going to have to disc it quite a bit. Do you think we're going to have a bigger issue, you know, with the seed coming up? Or do you think we can bury some of that with some of the discing? Or is it just going to spread it more across the field, you know, in the situation that we're in?
I think all of the above. You know, to a degree.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're gonna disseminate the seed that was laying on top of the ground that fell in the fall of 18. Yeah, you're gonna spread it across the field a little bit, and then when you take it and turn it heavy, you're gonna bury a some unknown percentage of that. But then two, by doing that big heavy, you know, primary tillage, the seed that were down in the soil seed bank outside of the germination zone, you know, you're going to bring those back up. So a little field history, you know, would be involved there. You know, have you had a big problem in the past and got it suppressed down, you know, using the stale seed bed system and burying seeds? So I think a lot of that's going to vary, you know, depending on the situation.
But, you know, we have a few producers that use the stale seed bed, mainly in center rice, you know, rotation. But, you know, even the rice acreage is going to have to be worked.
I had a farmer tell me yesterday, a Mississippi farmer, that he makes his best crops when the first pass through his field is a planter, meaning he wants all of his field work done in the fall, burned down with an airplane, and then the first time a tire hits the field, it's got seed with it.
And oftentimes, a lot of our ground, that's the first time the wheels hit it.
Well, yeah, because, you know, we say a lot of times field will get dry enough to plant, and it won't ever get dry enough to work.
That's the nature of buckshot, right? You got 30 minutes.
That's right.
30 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, y'all are all chuckling, but you're chuckling because you know it's a fact.
Oh, it's a fact.
So that's what we're dealing with, you know, going into this year. So, guys, before we jump off, give folks, you know, one or two things that you want them to know, you know, going into this crop, given the circumstances that we're facing.
Flexibility is the thing I think we've been talking about here. We're going to have to do our best to remain flexible. And you know, we don't have a lot of extra money to spend down market. We're going to have soybeans. You know, we're going to grow them. We just got to make some wise decisions on inputs. And again, I go back to that variety selection thing, since planting date may not be as much in our control as it historically is.
All right, so Trent's going with flexibility and variety selection. Jeremy, what do you got to add to that?
Well, I mean, that covers
a
lot.
It's cool if yours are the same.
But, you know, main focus right now is on seed quality, on the planting seed. You know, some of the data coming out of Arkansas State Plant Board is showing that, you know, we're significantly reduced germ and accelerated aging, you know, at this point compared to last year. You know, I'm talking 15 to 20% below. So, you know, make sure that the seed you get, you've got current, you know, germ and accelerated aging scores, you know, on those. And I know in Arkansas, our State Plant Board runs those. I'm not sure, you know, who in Mississippi, but you really need to know that. That way you can either kind of decide, you know, if you got something that's a little bit lower, you can plant it, you know, in optimal times. If you got, you know, some late planted, you want to make sure you got pretty good quality seed. And then also you can use that to adjust your seeding rate. You know, it's, you know, we had some issues last year with stands and everything just because of weather conditions. But that's when, you know, right now, you know, starting out, everybody's talking about varieties and just make sure you got, you know, pretty good seed. And already talking to some of the companies, you know, they're already culling lots, you know, just because the quality is not where it needs to be. So varieties are going to, you know, I think we're going to have enough seed to plant, but you may not be able to get your number one, number two, number three variety. You may have to go down the list, you know, quite a bit to to get that variety, you know, to be able to fill up your acreage.
Are those tested by lots?
They are, yep. So the plant board will go and pull lots and test those. But most everything that's been sent in now is non-certified. It's seed growers and, you know, people that have, you know, been able to see that are able to hang on to, you know, conventional seed and things like that. But a lot of stuff has been a non-certified test right now. But that's kind of concerning, you know, coming out of a year where we had problems. And then with all the things we've talked about, you know, that we got to look forward to, this is just another aspect that, you know, we kind of need to watch out for.
Something we hadn't had to really consider in the past. So
it's been several years since quality's been low, you know, seed quality's been low. But, you know, last year, you know, at the end of or the 1st of December, the average germ was 97. AA was, you know, up into high 60s. This year we're looking at, you know, upper 70s on germ and lower 50s on the accelerated aging. So, you know, anytime accelerated aging drops below 65%, I start getting concerned on that seed under adverse conditions.
All right, guys. So you heard flexibility, variety choices, seed quality. It's not oftentimes that Jason and I have the opportunity to have two of the greatest soybean minds in the Mid-South sitting in the room with us. So we want to thank Jeremy and Trent for sitting in today, and hopefully y'all learned something. And like always, we're going to get out of here, and if y'all have any questions, need any help, just give us a shout.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.